Imagine a vast tapestry woven from many threads. Demography, money, markets, belief, geography, law, and the clanging metal of war. In Birth Rates and Battle Lines, Charles M. Mugera walks us across that tapestry, showing how Europe's centuries-long ascendancy over Africa and Asia was not an accident of fate, but the outcome of a wide array of interacting systems. He insists that the story begins, quietly and practically, with people. The patterns of birth and death, the age structure of populations, and the health of bodies that would till fields, man ships, invent machines, and administer empires. From there, the narrative stretches outward into taxation and public goods, into specialization and the transfer of knowledge across generations, into the creation of banks and joint stock companies, into printing presses and scientific method, and into navies that stitched continents together. Along the way, Mugera keeps a brisk, conversational tone, part analytic historian, part neighborhood raconteur, so that the grand sweep of history reads like the coordinated preparation of a neighborhood barbecue where someone must corral the dishes, supplies, and the people who make it all happen. Mugera opens with the demographic foundation, birth and death rates, and age structure. Numbers matter, but not just in raw form. A youthful growing population provides labor for agriculture, industry, and armies. It generates potential innovators and a pool of recruits. But growth without health is hollow. The book emphasizes the virtuous cycle that arises when public health improves. Fewer deaths lead to a more stable labor force, which raises productivity and creates surplus. That surplus, if effectively pooled and invested, enhances living standards and funds further public goods, including better health systems. Europe's relative early gains in disease control and population health are presented as a quiet, structural advantage. It was not that Europe had an unbounded population explosion. Rather, steady improvements in mortality, hygiene, and medical responses allowed societies to maintain a resilient workforce capable of sustained innovation. Mugera is careful to stress that Africa and Asia each had complex demographic realities of their own. But Europe's trajectory combined numbers with improved quality of life in a way that facilitated longer-term gains in labor stability and inventive capacity. From demography, Mugera moves naturally to economic organization, how states and societies pooled resources and funded collective action. Taxation is more than revenue. It is the lever by which surplus can be marshaled for roads, fortifications, and fleets. The author uses a simple, memorable analogy, a neighborhood barbecue, where someone must coordinate contributions to explain how pooling enables projects that single households cannot undertake. The ingenuity of European fiscal arrangements, the relative predictability of some tax systems, and the creation of public goods, roads, ports, legal systems, allowed economies of scale. But perhaps most consequential were financial institutions, banks that lent capital, joint stock companies that spread risk and enabled voyages of discovery, and insurance mechanisms that made long-distance trade tolerable. These institutions converted idle wealth into fuel for trade, manufacture, and war. Mugera highlights how financial innovations in Europe created a feedback loop. As commerce expanded, the demand for credit and risk-sharing increased, which in turn spawned more sophisticated financial tools that further enlarged economic horizons. Specialization and division of labor are shown as the social machinery that turns surplus into innovation. When not everyone must grow their own food or craft their own pots, some people become full-time smiths, navigators, physicians, or mathematicians. This is where villages become cities and artisanal skills crystallize into industries. Mugera traces how non-agricultural specialists, artisans, merchants, bureaucrats, rose to prominence in European towns and how social institutions evolved to support functional differentiation. The result was a cultural environment in which craft knowledge was concentrated, refined, and transmitted, making technological and cultural advances more likely. European towns and guilds, universities, and later research institutions nurtured expertise. The cumulative effect was a society increasingly equipped to produce, adapt, and scale innovations in tools, governance, and warfare. But a society needs continuity to keep its gains. In the chapter on institutional continuity, Mugera examines how power and knowledge were transferred across generations. Political transference, whether peaceful succession or managed transitions, matters because abrupt rupture scatters capital and people and interrupts long-term projects. Europe's mix of inheritance systems, legal practices around property, and increasingly institutionalized education fostered a form of memory. Elites could pass wealth, administrative knowledge, and even military doctrine from father to son or through broader institutional channels like universities and bureaucracies. These mechanisms concentrated capital and expertise without guaranteeing justice or equality. Mugera is clear-eyed about the inequality that continuity sometimes baked in. Still, from the perspective of long-duration statecraft, these systems were crucial. They preserved the institutional knowledge necessary to maintain armies, navies, and overseas empires. The military chapter reads like a study in logistical ingenuity. Wars demanded not just courage, but supplies, administration, and the political will to extract resources. European states learned to defend surplus, grain stores, tax revenues, merchant fleets, using a mix of conscription, mercenaries, professional standing armies, and later navies. Mugera explains how military organization reflected broader strengths. Countries that could pool capital and extract reliable taxes could fund more complex military logistics. Those with better bureaucracies could maintain garrisons and fleets far from home. European wars also served as crucibles for innovation. Continuous competition forced improvements in tactics, fortifications, artillery, and naval architecture. The continent's military technology, in other words, was not merely a product of inventors. It was an expression of an entire societal capacity to marshal resources and knowledge toward the ultimate goal of projecting power. Governance and legitimacy are threaded through these discussions as both cause and consequence. Mugera argues that rule of law and bureaucratic efficiency, imperfect as they were, helped make governance predictable enough for trade and investment to thrive. Political legitimacy often rested on more than force. Legal frameworks, recognized property rights, and the capacity for reform made rulers credible partners for merchants and financiers. Europe's capacity to adapt politically, to reform institutions and absorb innovations into governance structures, created a flexibility other large, more centralized empires sometimes lacked. That flexibility was not inherently benign. It could serve elites at the expense of many, but it made European polities resilient and able to reinvent administrative structures to meet new challenges. Closely related is the chapter on cultural and ideological cohesion. Mugera frames ideology as the oil that keeps the social machine running. Shared beliefs, religious, philosophical, national, allowed disparate groups to coordinate large-scale projects, and crucially to ask people to sacrifice for the public good. Whether under the auspices of Christianity, emerging secular ideas about rights and governance, or nationalist narratives, Europeans developed compelling stories that justified mobilization. The Protestant ethic, Enlightenment values of individualism and progress, and civic identities provided moral legitimacy for work, investment, and expansion. These ideologies did not exist in a vacuum. They interacted with institutions, economics, and military needs, creating a cultural architecture that both motivated and rationalized empire. Expansion and integration formed the dramatic heart of Mugera's narrative. European demography, fiscal capacity, naval technology, and institutional adaptability converged to enable expansion overseas. This was not a sudden leap, but a gradual outward projection. Explorers financed by joint stock companies and state patronage, sailors navigating increasingly sophisticated ships, and colonists establishing footholds that turned into maritime empires. Mugera recounts the classic roster of players: Portugal, Spain, England, France, and the Dutch Republic, whose maritime innovations and imperial strategies reshaped global trade. But conquest was only half the story. Integration mattered. Conquered peoples were often absorbed through a mix of coercion, diplomacy, and assimilation. Missions, intermarriage, legal codes, and economic incentives all served to fold diverse regions into imperial systems. The author emphasizes that effective long-term control required more than victory in battle. It depended on the ability to govern, assimilate, and extract resources while maintaining enough local cooperation to keep the system running. Geography and resource distribution receive a pragmatic appraisal. Europe's dense network of navigable rivers and extensive coastline favored commerce, lowering the cost of moving goods and people. Rivers like the Rhine, Danube, and Seine were not mere backdrops. They were trade highways that knit regions together, enabling markets to scale and specialization to flourish. Climate and agricultural surplus mattered too. Temperate zones often provided predictable yields and allowed labor to shift into non-agricultural roles. Mugera is careful to note that geography does not determine destiny alone, but favorable conditions, when combined with the institutional and cultural factors he describes, amplified European capabilities. One of the book's more counterintuitive claims is that political fragmentation worked to Europe's advantage. Instead of consolidating into a single continental power, Europe's multiplicity of states created competition that fostered innovation. Rivalry pushed rulers to experiment, militarily, economically, and administratively, to outcompete neighbors. Innovations that worked spread quickly across borders, while failures remained localized. This mosaic of states became an engine for adaptation. The constant pressure to improve in order to survive or thrive accelerated technological diffusion and strategic change in ways centralized empires often could not match. Central to Mugera's thesis are the twin revolutions of science and industry. The scientific revolution's emphasis on empirical inquiry and reproducibility, think Copernicus, Galileo, Newton, freed intellectual life from sole reliance on tradition. The Industrial Revolution translated scientific breakthroughs into machines, factories, and new forms of production. Mugera contrasts the European approach, decentralized, experimental, and integrated with commerce and warfare, with many Asian scientific traditions that prize stability and hierarchical knowledge transmission. It's not a claim that Asia lacked genius or technical skill. Rather, Europe's institutional ecology turned scientific curiosity into scalable, transformative technologies more effectively during the critical centuries. Capitalism and financial institutions are the connective tissue between ideas and action. Banks extended credit, joint stock companies like the early trading companies spread risk and enabled ambitious voyages, and insurance mitigated catastrophic losses from ocean voyages. Legal stability and property rights encouraged investment, and a growing culture of contractual enforcement let merchants operate over long distances. Mugera highlights the contrast with Asian economic structures, where trade and state relations often emphasize stability and imperial control over the risk-taking capitalism that propelled European global expansion. Together, financial innovation and legal frameworks allowed Europe to underwrite exploration, colonization, and the industrial build-out that followed. With finance and ships in place, the age of global exploration became the age of colonialism and exploitation. European maritime empires controlled trade routes, extracted resources, and often imposed new legal and cultural orders on colonized lands. Missionary activity and cultural expansion intertwined with economic motives. Religion was both conviction and instrument, helping justify imperial projects and assimilate local populations. Mugera unflinchingly discusses the exploitative dimensions of empire, showing how the interplay of military superiority, demographic momentum, and strategic resource extraction reshaped societies across Africa and Asia. At the heart of these processes lay cultural and ideological drivers, Enlightenment ideas of progress, a Protestant work ethic in parts of Europe, and a valorization of individualism and science that reshaped social institutions, education, and political life. Mugera argues that these currents created a virtuous cycle. Ideological commitments to education and rational governance fed scientific advance, which in turn reinforced the legitimacy of institutions that benefited from those advances. Military innovation and logistical mastery enabled relatively small European populations to project power globally. Continuous warfare created laboratories for new technologies and organizational forms. Naval superiority and logistics systems, ports, supply chains, disciplined administrations allowed European states to punch above their demographic weight. Mugera stresses that this was not simple brute force. It was the product of systemic advantages in organization, finance, and technology. Information control and education are presented as essential accelerants. The printing press democratized learning, enabling rapid diffusion of ideas and the creation of feedback loops between science, industry, and governance. Mugera contrasts Europe's mass information diffusion with the manuscript and bureaucratic cultures elsewhere, arguing that the scale and speed of European knowledge exchange were unprecedented and powerfully enabling. Finally, Mugera confronts decline and rebalancing. Europe's moment was not eternal. The 20th and 21st centuries witnessed the re-emergence of Asian powers and a more multipolar global order. The author insists that the same systemic forces that lifted Europe can and do change. Demographic shifts economic modernization, institutional reform, and technological catch-up redraw power maps. History, he reminds us, is a dance of rising and falling empires, where adaptability matters as much as initial advantage. Throughout, Mugera returns to the central lesson: dominance resulted not from a single cause, but from the synergy of many. Demography supplied the human capital, economic institutions converted surplus into projects, specialization created the deep expertise necessary for innovation, legal and inheritance systems preserved capital and knowledge, military and administrative systems protected and projected power, cultural narratives bound populations to collective aims, and geography provided a favorable stage. Together, these threads formed a durable pattern that explains much of Europe's global preeminence over five centuries, and explains why that preeminence could and did change. Mugera's narrative is more than a catalog, it is an argument about systems and feedback loops. He cautions against monocausal explanations, and invites us instead to see history as the outcome of interconnected parts that, when aligned, produce extraordinary effects. That alignment produced empires that reshaped trade, cultures, and political orders worldwide. It also produced injustices and extractive systems whose legacy continues to shape global inequalities. By the end of the book, the takeaway is both sobering and liberating. Sobering because the mechanisms that built empires often inflicted deep harm. Liberating because the same mechanisms, demography, institutions, ideas, finance, can be repurposed for different ends. Knowledge, Mugera suggests, is power whether wielded to dominate or to uplift. Understanding the architecture of power across centuries is the first step in imagining how to build equitable, resilient institutions in the centuries to come. He does not offer a tidy blueprint for the future, but he does offer a framework. Pay attention to health and demographics. Design institutions that pool resources effectively. Support education, information diffusion, and experimentation. And remember that legitimacy and adaptability are as important as raw strength. In short, the story of Europe's rise is instructive precisely because it reveals a playbook of interacting forces, one we still ignore at our peril, or adapt for a more constructive future.